Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. In studio with me is Bruce, is it Friedrich, right?
Friedrich.
Bruce Friedrich, who is an 11th grade teacher at the Baltimore Freedom Academy. And he was in the Inner Harbor by the aquarium giving out pamphlets about being vegetarian or vegan, which we'll talk about in a moment, and was approached by the police. We have a connection going on our website, steinershow.org. You can see the little video there and the story. There's a Sun Papers article that was written about it. And it raised a lot of larger issues, larger in the sense that going beyond the issue of veganism or vegetarianism and giving out leaflets at the aquarium, what is the notion of public space and private property and the waterfront? What rights do people have constitutionally to be able to give out leaflets, talk, persuade people of their opinions and ideas in what we call public spaces? Ed Bruce wrote me an email about this over the weekend. I think it was an email.
Yes.
And I said, yeah, it sounds something interesting. We should definitely have a conversation about that. And there are a number of sides to this. We call the Inner Harbor Waterfront Group. Laurie Schwartz runs that. She couldn't make it today. We tried the city solicitor's office and others who are involved in this as well. And they couldn't make it, but we'll continue the discussion with them and others when they can come on. David Rokaw, who is staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland, will come on. He'll be joining us by phone in just a little bit when he finishes a meeting he's in at the ACLU. But we are here now with Bruce Friedrich. I'm sorry. And welcome. Good to have you on the air.
It's great to be here, Mark. Thank you for the invitation.
So, Bruce, before I know we could leap and talk about why you're a vegan and vegetarian for days, but first, let's talk about, and my producers would and my wife would as well, but anyway, before we do that, let's talk about what happened to you in the Inner Harbor. What I saw from that video clip was you were confronted by a Baltimore City policeman who was going to arrest you for giving out leaflets in what the National Aquarium said was their own private space.
Yeah, I mean, he was actually going to arrest us for asking him why we couldn't give out leaflets. We hadn't been leafleting for a little while when he showed up. And I said, look, we've got the documentation from the Waterfront Partnership of Baltimore. I've spoken with two people from City Parks and Recreation. According to the regulations that the Waterfront Partnership promulgates, because we have non-commercial material, we are allowed to be here without a permit. And that's when the police officer ordered me off the property under threat of arrest. I said, seriously, you're going to arrest us for asking you a question? We're not even, you know, this hyper-offensive vegetarian literature that's so unsettling you. You know, that's not the issue here. I'm just asking you a question. And that's what you see on the video that is posted, I guess, on your website and the Baltimore Sun website and my Facebook page, where he says, I'm not going to tell you. He takes out his handcuffs. He hops off his bike. And he says, I'm not going to tell you again. This is your second lawful order. And it was really quite surreal.
And so what happened after that? Well, you decided to leave rather than get arrested that day.
I did decide to leave because, getting arrested is not a fun thing. And the police officer seemed to be sort of testosterone up. He seemed very angry. We'd already passed out more than 1,000 leaflets. We've passed out probably 10,000 leaflets in that exact spot over the last 6 months. We've been there multiple times, never had a problem, been told by Parks and Recreation that we're allowed to be there. And now we are in contact with the ACLU and hope that they will help us set this right.
What precipitated you being confronted?
Somebody from the aquarium came out and told us that we weren't allowed to be there. And we said, well, actually, we've got the documentation. And it says about, you know, we said, are we in Area 10? And the aquarium guy said, yes, you're in Area 10, and that's our property. And I said, well, actually, the Waterfront Partnership of Baltimore says that if we are doing a demonstration, we need National Aquarium approval. But if we are passing out non-commercial material, we can do that without a permit. So you can't actually tell us to leave this public property. And I got to tell you, from a First Amendment perspective, the National Aquarium, they shouldn't have any veto power over anything. If we want to be there saying, you know, this aquarium is a prison that kills animals before their time, which it is, we should be able to do that without their approval.
Were you saying that aquarium?
No, we were passing out vegetarian literature. But my point is that they shouldn't have veto power, period, in my opinion. But their own regulations say that they don't have veto power over non-commercial material. So, and we've been there multiple times before without incident.
So you weren't arrested. You plan to go back and give out more leaflets?
Well, we've asked the ACLU what they advise. I mean, we don't want to push this to arrest, although we'd be, I guess, open to pushing it to arrest if we feel that we are as we think we are, completely within our First Amendment rights to be there. I mean, it's public property, and I like what the ACLU attorney said, David Rocha, to the Baltimore Sun. He said it's something along the lines of it's mind-blowing that anybody in this country would suggest that passing out leaflets on public property might be illegal.
The question is, what is public and what is private here? I mean, there's been this ongoing discussion between the ACLU and other parties and the solicitor's office, the city of Baltimore, what these rules and regulations should be and what exactly is public and private property. I mean, they made big bones about when they were building the Inner Harbor that there would be no they would not stop access to the water, which would assume that it's a public space around the water area.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly true. And I mean, I kind of think that there are three issues. There's the issue of the First Amendment, basically. This is public property. We should be able to be there. There's the issue of the Waterfront Partnership of Baltimore, to the degree that it has authority. It says we can be there. And that was violated. And then there's the issue of a police officer who refuses to explain the issue to us and orders us off the property entirely under threat of arrest, even after we've stopped doing what he, you know, seems to have found so offensive.
What have you heard from the police department? I mean, in that regard, in terms of what the officer did, in terms of his being what looked like on the tape being fairly belligerent.
Well, he was extremely belligerent, and after I left, I mean, this is secondhand information, but I was off the property, and other people who had also not been leafleting at this point for 20 minutes were given a police incident report. And they said to the police officers who were surrounding them that it was young women, and they said that they felt intimidated and that they felt afraid to come to the Inner Harbor, you know, even to do touristy things. And one of the police officers said to them, good. My wife, who is Indian, she was saying, don't we have a First Amendment right to be here? And another police officer said, if you don't like it, go back where you came from. So in terms of ambassadors of Baltimore, these police officers failed pretty miserably that day. And I'm an 11th grade contemporary affairs teacher, and I teach my kids about the Constitution, about the First Amendment, about the idea that our tax dollars pay the police officers' salary so that they can protect us and protect the law and be ambassadors of Baltimore. They failed pretty colossally by any measure on that day.
So the police department is not responding to you at all?
We got a call. We called and filed a complaint that next Monday. So the day after it happened, I filed a complaint. One of the other activists filed a complaint. And we got a call back, and they say that they're investigating.
Let's see. And then this is – we hear a lot. Let's open the phones here, see if we can get some calls. And we have a few phone issues, but I think we'll try to get this thing through. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The aggressiveness, I think, of the police, things I've seen, and I have a lot of respect for a lot of police and for the commissioner, but that I've seen on the street myself with people just being really rudely addressed.
Yeah, I mean, my interaction with Baltimore's police has generally been very good. I mean, I've been in Baltimore for 2 years. We've done a tremendous amount of leafleting and protesting, our little loosely knit group of animal rights activists, and the police have always been very helpful. We go stand in front of a KFC on North Howard.
Chicken?
Yeah, in front of a KFC in North Howard with big signs denouncing KFC and passing out anti-KFC literature. They have come out on multiple occasions and asked us to leave. The police have shown up and been completely on our side, just really terrific consistently. So it was very surprising to me that Officer Johnson on that day was just so completely, in my opinion, out of hand in response to people who were just passing out literature.
Well, a lot of people are calling in. Let me get them in here. 410-319-8888. My friend, you were leafleting in front of Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC. Your pamphlet reads Kentucky Fried Cruelty with pictures of and comments from Russell Simmons, Paul McCartney, Reverend Al Sharpton, Pink, and Forrest Whitaker, all saying this is why we're vegetarians, and you're talking about how cruel the animals are treated by the folks who raise these chickens for Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, I mean, that's precisely right. According to Gallup, 96% of Americans believe that animals should be protected from cruelty, and yet on these factory farms, the animal welfare law doesn't exist. The Animal Welfare Act completely exempts agricultural practices. So the range of things that happen to these animals would warrant felony cruelty charges where dogs or cats treat it similarly. So we don't see our goal as trying to change anybody's beliefs. we see our goal as educational. Once people recognize how badly the animals are treated, they won't want to support it. And so what we're doing out there is just passing out literature and saying hi to people. And we've never had any complaints other than from this, you know, one guy in the aquarium.
Let us try to get some calls in here, 410-319-8888. Bruce Friedrich wrote to me this weekend. He's an 11th grade teacher at the Baltimore Freedom Academy. Used to work
at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Yes.
So there's a whole question around civil liberties, about police attitudes, and you can talk with him a bit about his work in terms of why he's a active vegetarian. And since I am surrounded by vegans all day long in my office with my two producers, it seems apt. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Bruce in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Bruce.
I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. It actually is a major subject I feel strongly about. That in one way, it is a constitutional issue, but what it's really about is...
And we didn't cut you off. If you can try to call back, we'll try to pick it up again. This is our phone's a little... That there's something from the outside going on. It's not something inside. Let's try so we can get a comment from Gary, see if that works. Gary, you're on the air.
And firefighter. And big time props to you, dude. All right. I was just reading an article about the Yes Men in the Progressive magazine.
Yeah.
Like within the last day or so. And, even though I don't want to get arrested anymore either, you know, I've gotten arrested a few. I got arrested 2 days after I took the police test in 78. I know how police are, you know. That's why so many black people across America are anti-police, okay? But that being said, we have to get to a point where we're willing to tie up the courts. The Yes Men said something like this. Said, imagine if we're willing to be arrested like 10,000 at a time and how we could tie up the courts with jury trials, because we have a right to demand a jury trial. The only thing is, they have us all afraid. And Kwame Nkrumah said, the secret of life is to have no fear. So I'm going to take your comments off the air. I'll let you get some more calls in.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, I mean, the Yes Men are certainly personal heroes of mine, and I have had the good fortune of meeting them a couple of times. And for anybody who has not seen it, I think the movie is called The Yes Men Take Over the World, I think is the title
right.
of the
we've
movie.
We've had them on the show.
Absolutely spectacular. Must-see viewing. Thanks for the call, Gary.
We'll try a couple callers in here again as soon as we see who's there. 410-319-8888. And I see a couple of calls coming in, and as soon as the names pop up on the screen, I will get you on the air, 410-319-8888. There's so many ways I could address this issue that you're talking about. The confrontation with the police officers is one thing, which was, to me, pretty frightening in that this is supposed to be this is not how all police act. I've seen...
Not at all.
You know, but there's some overzealous, testosterone-driven young men on the force that kind of push this sometimes.
Yep.
And if somebody has an opposing view of this, let's look at them and see what they have to say. Keith, you're on the air.
Sure, but I feel as though that, you know, sometimes people in law enforcement just get, it's a catch-22 situation. Now, if the police officer asked them to leave, if you want to talk about civil liberties, he's a high school teacher, okay? So, I mean, I guess he can defer about what's right and what's really wrong. But you know what? Sometimes when people are handing out leaflets and things like that, now, if you think the police just came down and arbitrarily just decided, well, I'm going to start knocking on these guys, that's not true. Sometimes people just, and accept their literature and go right to the nearest phone or get on their cell phone and say, these people are aggressively, I wouldn't want to call it panhandling, but, if you take a step to the left, they take a step to the left. And make sure that their message is across. And for some people, they are highly offended behind it. I mean, and I've had it happen to me now. Nothing about him having a vegan stance or everything like that, but you got to look. So the whole world is not vegan, and everybody has an opposing view. Now, I've seen the YouTube interview, and I don't see what it could – it might have been belligerent, but it wasn't offensive for them using any profanity or anything like that. When it's time for you to go, you go. And that's the point of that. If you want to be arrested, then stay there. That's what happened. That's my comment. Thanks for my comment.
Keith, thanks so much.
Yeah,
Bruce.
I mean, I appreciate your comment, Keith, and I understand where it's coming from. The problem, though, is that we have the First Amendment, and the First Amendment to the Constitution protects everybody's right to free speech, regardless of what it is that we want to say. So if we had wanted to be out there with some outrageous, offensive literature, passing it out on public property, the First Amendment, and the Constitution is, of course, the highest law in the land, the First Amendment dictates that the aquarium doesn't get to say, these guys need to leave. If it's public property, we have a right to be there. And I will point out that we have had nothing but positive experiences with the folks at Parks and Recreation. They gave us the brochure telling us where we could be. We had been there half a dozen times before. They explained to us, you know, everything that was going on. We didn't have any complaints from people. We're certainly not playing a game of scrimmage with people. We're just offering people literature, completely non-offensive.
So was it the aquarium that called the police?
Yes, it was a fellow from the aquarium. I think his name was Tim, if memory serves, who came over and told a couple of our leafleters that they were going to be spending the night in Central Cell Block. He was very belligerent and angry. Then the Parks and Recreation people came over and said, hey, this guy from the aquarium really wants you to go. We said, well, look, you know, we've been here many times in the past. You told us that we can be here. And due respect, the aquarium doesn't get to dictate whether the First Amendment to the Constitution applies or not. You know, he's in the aquarium, and he may prefer that we're not passing out vegetarian literature, but that's not up to him. And unfortunately, the police came down and decided to do his bidding instead of the bidding of the Constitution. And they did it in a very heavy-handed way that really brooked no dissent. I couldn't disagree more, Keith. I think the police, if they are going to enforce a law, unless there is like some sort of danger or the law is being broken in that moment, they do owe it to people to be courteous and to explain what the law is that's being broken. I was no longer passing out literature when this police officer, Officer Johnson, came up. He refused to explain to me what he thought I was doing wrong and just ordered me off the property. And I think he violated my constitutional rights, and I think he violated his duty as an ambassador of Baltimore.
410-319-8888. Tyrone, you're on the air.
First off, I want to say I want to commend you for what you're doing as far as your First Amendment right. I also had an issue before previous years with the Baltimore City Police Department. I worked personally with the ACLU. One thing I can honestly say about the ACLU, they will back you up 100%. You have that right. I honestly don't believe in the fact that you had to leave. One thing I'm going to say is fight for your rights. Do what you have to do for yourself. And I commend you for sticking with the ACLU, and I commend you for coming on 88.9 expressing your feelings. That's my comment. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. That call, Tyrone.
Thanks, Tyrone. Very nice of you.
410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll go to Rob in Baltimore County. You're on the air.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Rob.
For having me. I also want to pretty much echo the sentiments of the previous call before me. I also commend you for what you're doing as far as advocating for your own rights and also utilizing the resources at hand, namely ACLU. Having said that, you know, putting things into context, at least from my basic understanding, I look at it like this. Most police officers, educationally, most of them have at most an associate's degree. Maybe a few may have an actual bachelor's. So having said that, a lot of these guys aren't really well-read when it comes to law. They may be well-read and prepared for laws like traffic law and stuff like that, but they're not really prepared for all the intricacies of the First Amendment and so on. Not to mention, the average beat cop, and I hate to use such a derogatory term when it comes to policemen, but the average beat cop, when we really think about it, though, they rely primarily on their presence, and what I mean by that is their sense of intimidation, because they take advantage of the fact that the average citizen is not going to advocate for his own personal rights, let alone their constitutional rights. And so they pretty much take advantage of the fact that most people have an innate fear of the police anyway. So having said that, they can pretty much say what they want to say without being challenged by anybody, because no one's going to really jeopardize their own freedom for any causes. But when you look at the broader picture, the macro point of view, and this economic climate that we're in right now, as far as the city and every other city and state and so on being strapped for cash.
Right.
Police, for me, in my estimation, they are basically, you know, they're drones. They're basically, they work at the behest of their corporate masses. And let's look at it. The National Aquarium brings in a lot of tourist dollars. They also pay up, I'm sure, a pretty hefty amount of property taxes. And so they look at it from an economic point of view, where so we have this guy here, and all I'm doing right now is playing a devil's advocate. We have this guy here, this loudmouth guy, this vegan tree lover, tree hugger, and he's basically undermining our fiduciary progress or our financials by, you know, advocating, you know, treatment of these animals and how they're going to die early. although I'm sure his literature is probably spot on. But my point, though, is that the police, for the most part, nothing more than worker bees or their corporate overseers for the masses. That's all they're doing. They're working at the behest of the corporate masses for property taxes and also to ensure future tourist dollars. That's all I got to say.
Rob, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I appreciate the call, Rob. And I will just say that that has not been my experience of Baltimore's police. I mean, I've done an awful lot of demonstrating in Baltimore. And although KFC will come out and they'll call the police and they'll ask the police to remove us, the police come and they explain to KFC that we have every right to be there. We've leafleted at Ravens games peacefully. And the people who are the Ravens, you know, ownership will send their security out and they'll tell us to leave. And we'll say, no, we have a right to be here. And the police will come out and they'll say, no, they have a right to be here. So at least for me in Baltimore, I think they have tended to do, at least recently, and maybe this is credit to the ACLU for past violations, but at least recently, the police have recognized that we have a First Amendment right on public property to be passing out literature, and they have been respectful, and they have been on our side against the Ravens and against KFC, so we've really appreciated that up to this point.
I understand we have, before we go to Bernard in Parkville, hold on, we're going to come to your question. David Rocha is joining us by phone, who is staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland, been a guest on the show many times. David, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
And we did ask the Waterfront Partnership. They couldn't make it today, and we did talk to the City Solicitor's Office. They couldn't make it today either, which is why there's not different angles of this on the show at one time. But, David, is this beyond this vegan passing out leaflets issue in terms of the question of what rights people have to give out leaflets or to demonstrate peacefully in the Inner Harbor area, who has rights to property and who doesn't?
Well, it's the subject of a longstanding lawsuit that we have and has been the subject of very extended settlement discussions. And as the Baltimore Sun reported, I think both sides feel that we are on the verge of settlement, but it's an issue that certainly has come up periodically, which is why we filed suit way back in 2003. And it's important to resolve because the Inner Harbor is the central town square of Baltimore. It's where locals and tourists go. It's where you find crowds. And so it's where you find people who want to exercise that most American and fundamental of rights that we have, the right to free speech.
But now, who owns the Inner Harbor? Who makes decisions about where people can stand and not stand, where people can give things out and not be able to give things out?
Well, in terms of ownership, for the vast majority of the harbor, there are no complexities. It's a city park. There are a few parcels mixed in where the situation becomes arguably slightly more complex, where there has been a long-term lease either to the aquarium, for example, or where a particular parcel has been sold to or is owned by the state. So, for example, the World Trade Center and the plaza in front of it. And so that division of ownership in a space that to the observer looks like one seamless large park creates some difficulties because the rules are potentially different when you're talking about public and private property. Now, obviously, the World Trade Center is not private property, but the landowner there is different. So if you're having a fight about rules, you have to fight with a different landowner. In the case of the aquarium, my view, and it's from my perspective well backed up by case law, is that when public property is leased to a private entity, it doesn't lose its character as public property, and so it doesn't lose its character as what the law calls a public forum, that is a place where free speech activities are protected. And on public property, the degree of protection for free speech activity varies with the character of the property. But in the Inner Harbor, where we're talking about a park, that is the type of public property that the court has said is presumptively available for free speech activities. In a famous case from the 1930s, an ACLU case, by the way, called Hague versus CIO, that arose out of the mayor of, I think it was Jersey City, New Jersey's attempt to suppress union demonstrations, the court said that the streets and parks have, from time immemorial, been held in trust for the use of the people. And what it was referring to there was use for free speech purposes. So parks are the quintessential location where speech is supposed to take place. And as I said, there are a number of cases, and from my perspective, even though there may be a lease of the property to a private entity like the aquarium, it doesn't lose its public forum character as a place where speech must be permitted. So from my perspective, leafleting should be permitted in all of those public areas of the Inner Harbor. And the question becomes a little more difficult when you're talking about demonstrations, because those involve a different set of concerns, because demonstrations can involve more people and so can create a problem of competing uses for the same space, where the speech activity can preclude the other uses of the space. And so for that reason, the courts have allowed municipalities to have permit systems so that those competing uses can be managed and planned for. But you can't rely on that as a basis for denying people their free speech rights. And so I think the difficulty in the Inner Harbor really is that there are so many stakeholders. It's so important to so many people, really to everybody in Baltimore. And it has been a, I think all sides would agree, a difficult process, but I hope that we are on the verge, and I hope that the goal, my goal at least, is to have a set of rules that will be clear and understandable and easily enforceable and easy to follow, and that everyone will know that there will be maps at the harbor so that people will know where they can go and can't go and what they can do and can't do.
Well, it seems to me that one of the problems here, and folks, at lunch, 410-319-8888, those of you who left can come back, and it seems the phone's working, which is a really good thing. 410-319-8888 is the number here. David Rocha, you just heard, at staff attorney for the ACLU here in Maryland, Bruce Friedrich, a 11th grade teacher in Baltimore Freedom Academy that was almost arrested for handing out vegan and vegetarian animal rights literature at the aquarium over the weekend. By an overzealous officer. Not that everyone is, but that one certainly sounded like on the tube that we saw. 410-319-8888. But see, the larger question here seems to be that, you know, there was a, when you had communities that had corners where there were lots of stores, and it could be, even when I was growing up, it could be a Reed's Truck Store and the pool hall and the Giant and the Toddle House or whatever was there, a church on one corner, that people could leaflet. It was a sidewalk. It belonged to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're raising these weird questions where the public's, what we thought of as public spaces are now privately owned, whether they're shopping centers or places in the Inner Harbor, which was supposed to be a public space. That was part of the argument when it was developed that it would be a public space. So this is to me also a political question. It's a philosophical question. It's a question of what is the line between public and private property and our rights.
I think you're right. I think the privatizing of public space does pose a real risk, and it's an issue that the ACLU nationally and locally has been quite vigilant about to ensure that the privatization does not result in a reduction of our First Amendment rights and our ability to really communicate with each other collectively in person about important political issues. There was a similar issue in Silver Spring, you may remember, where a private developer was given control of an entire street in downtown Silver Spring as part of a redevelopment effort, and then there was conflict over people who wanted to take photographs and who wanted to hand out leaflets on that space, and that ended up getting resolved favorably. But the issue recurs, and it's an issue that the ACLU has tried to be quite vigilant about.
Do you want to jump in here, Bruce?
No, I mean, it's I am just so in awe of the work that the ACLU does. I think it's fantastic. And I was actually thinking, it's my understanding that the Ninth Circuit has held that things like malls, if they're places where people generally go unrestricted, so like malls, grocery stores, etc., there was a ballot initiative to help animals called Proposition 2 in California, and we were able to gather signatures in all kinds of places where we haven't been able to gather them, in places like Ohio or Arizona or Florida. And I'm wondering, David, what the status is of that nationally. Is there some likelihood that those places will be opened up for First Amendment activities?
The law is very mixed on that. There was an old Supreme Court decision on that was quite good that then got overturned later. And in large part, the good law on that has come from state Supreme Courts, which have been interpreting their own state constitutions in ways that provided greater protections than the Supreme Court has said the First Amendment provides. So the leader in that is New Jersey, and the Supreme Court of New Jersey, which has held that these large regional shopping centers are really the modern town square, and that even though those are purely private property, not publicly owned at all, not and leased, but purely privately owned, but said that even in those privately owned spaces, through the interpretation of their state constitution and the state common law of trespass, they held that the malls could not completely prohibit activities like leafleting.
It is a really sticky question. I mean, when you look at the Inner Harbor or places like Hunt Valley or places like White Marsh, which are these giant open spaces that pretend to be town squares, they only pretend for a short while until something like this happens.
But then, I mean, as David said, the Inner Harbor is public property. The Inner Harbor is, it's a park, and we should be able to pass out literature there. And I think the National Aquarium is also, isn't the National Aquarium taxpayer funded, or am I wrong about that?
I think it does get some. I'm not sure of the status of their funding, but I am sure that they are not a government entity. They're a private nonprofit corporation. And the fact that they receive government funding, while I think might be important in terms of how we think about this as a philosophical matter, turns out to be irrelevant as a legal matter in deciding whether or not they're what's called a state entity. The aquarium, I'm pretty sure, is not a state entity. It's a private entity.
I remember some years back at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they were leafleting at the Wienermobile, was touring zoos. And so PETA was organizing demonstrations in front of zoos wherever the Wienermobile was, vegetarian demonstrations. And the ACLU in Alabama and in a couple of other cities, I think North Carolina, I can't remember, Oklahoma City, came to bat and filed injunctions to get permission for PETA activists, successfully to get permission for PETA activists to stand at the entrance to the zoo passing out vegetarian literature, because the zoos, which I had previously thought zoos were private, but apparently, at least in these cases, the zoos were city-owned, and in those cases, consequently, the zoos had to let people stand right at the entrance and pass out literature.
Before we go, just a quick question I have to ask you, Bruce. So you were at the aquarium handing out vegan vegetarian literature. Why were you at the aquarium doing that?
Well, we weren't actually at the aquarium. We were where we thought the Parks and Recreation had told us that we could be. We were at the Inner Harbor, and we were kind of
all over. This was not directed at the aquarium?
No, we were all over the Inner Harbor. When the police officer confronted me, I was on the walking bridge between the aquarium and the Barnes & Noble. We had people who were also confronted by the police directly in front of the Barnes & Noble. We were sort of up the promenade a little ways. So it was just, it was what David said. This is where people congregate. There are lots and lots of people. And we were there for more than an hour and had been there on multiple previous occasions and never had a problem with Parks and Recreation. We gave away more than 1,000 pieces of literature and everybody was super friendly. I mean, we didn't have anybody who was, miffed at all, except this one guy in the aquarium who didn't even take a leaflet. He just didn't want us there. But it was near the aquarium, but not, the aquarium wasn't the point.
So, David, where does this end up? What are these negotiations going on very quickly between you and the city, and the solicitor's office?
It would be improper for me at multiple.
No, levels. I'm not asking for specifics. I'm curious. I mean, can you in general talk about what the issues are? Whether just about. You probably can't.
No. I mean, as much as I would like to, it would be sort of in bad faith for me to discuss. I mean, settlement discussions are supposed to be confidential, and I would be acting improperly if I aired them in public.
Completely understand. It's okay. David Rocha, thank you for joining us and jumping in. I know you had a busy day, and I appreciate you being part of this program to open this up for our listeners. David Rocha, staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland. Thank you so much, David. Always good to talk to you.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
Bruce Friedrich, pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you. Thanks, Mark.
And the vegetarian, vegan, animal rights activist.
Be happy to come on and discuss that sometime,
we'll
too.
We'll do that. I think it'll be great. And Christina's smiling, and other people are as well, so I think it's a good idea. We should do it. He's also 11th grade teacher at the Baltimore Freedom Academy. Good place to teach and work as well.
It is. A little hot today, but thankfully they cut the day in half.
No AC. But, you know, there you go. We want you to stay tuned for the next hour. There's an article written by Judith Mayer in the New Yorker called Secret Sharer. There's a trial coming up. A former official of the employee of the National Security Agency is going to be tried, could have 30-some years in prison for showing the waste and fraud inside the NSA. They said he broke state secrets and charged him under the Espionage Act. And the question is there now in America a corporate intelligence community complex growing that is a danger to our civil liberties? We'll tackle that in the next segment of our show. So stay with us. On the way there, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.